Hello, my name is Bill Coghlan, and welcome to First Person Civil War Podcast, which retells the stories of the soldiers and officers on the ground in the battles of the Civil War. Episode 12 is entitled Private Edward A. Moore and the 1st Rockbridge Artillery at the Battle of 2nd Manassas, and relies on his book, The Story of a Cannoneer Under Stonewall Jackson, in which is told the part taken by the Rockbridge Artillery in the Army of Northern Virginia, which Edward Moore published in 1907. Edward A. Moore lived in Rockbridge County, Virginia, before the Civil War began, and by the spring of 1861 was in his junior year at Washington College. In the early months of 1861, Edward Moore talks of a minority of residents in the county supporting secession, as Virginia had not yet left the Union. But after President Lincoln called for 75,000 troops against the newly formed Confederacy further south, the residents of Rockbridge County as a whole favored secession. Edward Moore watched as the Rockbridge Artillery formed in late April 1861, alongside other units of infantry and cavalry, who drilled under the supervision of cadets from the Virginia Military Institute, which resided in Rockbridge County. Edward Moore's three brothers all joined Confederate units, but he was forbidden by his father to join in the fighting. The 1st Rockbridge Artillery left in June 1861, but Edward would not join the battery until after he enlisted on 3 March 1862. The 1st Rockbridge Artillery formed alongside the 2nd, 4th, 5th, and eventually the 27th and 33rd Virginia Regiments as the 1st Brigade, commanded by Thomas J. Jackson. At the Battle of 1st Manassas, the 1st Rockbridge Artillery famously stood like a stone wall alongside the rest of their brigade, commanded by Jackson, and was thereafter known as the Stonewall Brigade. Edward Moore joined the 1st Rockbridge Artillery by mid-March 1862, which was still in the Stonewall Brigade, and fought in Jackson's Valley Campaign and Malvern Hill. The 1st Rockbridge Artillery, at this time, was still directly attached to the Stonewall Brigade, commanded by Colonel William S. Baylor. In Jackson's division, commanded by Brigadier General William B. Taillefer, in Major General Stonewall Jackson's left wing of the Army of Northern Virginia. Following the Army of the Potomac's defeat just outside of Richmond, Major General John Pope, commander of the Army of Virginia, and eventually detached corps from the Army of the Potomac, advanced from Washington, D.C. into Virginia. Private Moore and the 1st Rockbridge Artillery marched north from their camp outside of Richmond in the left wing to meet General Pope's advance. The left wing arrived on the same ground around Manassas Junction that was fought on the year before, and occupied a position alongside an unfinished railroad line. Longstreet's wing, at that time, was still miles away as the Battle of 2nd Manassas, or 2nd Bull Run, began, and Jackson would have to fight alone. Private Moore and the 1st Rockbridge Artillery entered the fight on the first day. Here we halted long enough for a hurried breakfast for men and horses. Sleep did not seem to enter into Jackson's calculations, or time was regarded as too precious to be allowed for it. We were on the move again by noon, and approaching the scene of battle of July 1861. This was on Thursday, August 28, 1862, and a battle was evidently to open at any moment. And he continues, "About 2 p.m., we went into position, but before firing a shot, suddenly moved off, and marching almost in a semicircle, came up in the rear of the infantry, who were now hotly engaged. This fighting was around the Bronner Farm, and were from Brigadier General King's division, who were marching along the Warrenton Turnpike to link back up with the Army of Virginia. The Stonewall Brigade faced the regiments of the 2nd, 6th, and 7th Wisconsin and the 19th Indiana, which were in a brigade that would in the next month earn the title of the Iron Brigade. Private Moore and the 1st Rockbridge Artillery provided infantry support. The battle was about 2 hours in duration, and by sundown, the firing had entirely ceased, the enemy being driven from the field, leaving their dead and wounded. The infantry of the Stonewall Brigade had been in the thickest of it all, and had suffered severe loss. The morning of 29 September was mostly an artillery duel, but Private Moore noted the precarious situation Jackson's wing faced. As Longstreet's wing was still approaching, the now formed Army of Virginia outnumbered the Confederates they faced, and began maneuvering infantry and artillery into position. Before he, meaning Longstreet, reached the field, however, and while we were enjoying the sense of relief at his coming, one of the enemy's batteries had quietly and unobserved managed to get into one of the positions occupied by our battery during the morning. Their first volley coming from such an unexpected quarter created a great commotion. This was Battery B of the 1st Pennsylvania Light Artillery, who was supporting Brigadier General George G. Meade's Brigade of Pennsylvania Reserves, as they maneuvered toward the Bronner Farm. Private Moore and the 1st Rockbridge Artillery engaged the Pennsylvanians. Instantly, we galloped to their front and unlimbered our guns at close range. Other of our batteries fired a few shots, but soon ceased, all seeming intent on witnessing a duel between the two batteries of 4 guns each. Their position was more favorable, as our limbers and caissons, or ammunition wagons, were behind the crest of a hill, while we were on level ground, with ours fully exposed. Each man worked as if success depended on his individual exertions. While Captain Pogue and Lieutenant Graham galloped back and forth among the guns, urging us to our best efforts. Eugene Alexander of Moorfield had his thigh bone broken and was incapacitated for service. Sergeant Payne was struck by a solid shot just below the knee, and his leg left hanging by shreds of flesh. An hour later, when being lifted into an ambulance, I heard him ask if his leg could not be saved. But in another hour, he was dead. Brigadier General Meade's brigade and artillery support retired from the Bronner Farm as Longstreet's wing began arriving on the same ground. Private Moore and the 1st Rockbridge Artillery were no longer on the flank of the army, but now at the hinge of the two wings. On the morning of 30 August, Private Moore took stock of the 2 previous days of fighting. The shifting of troops began early, our battery changing position several times during the forenoon. Neither army had buried its dead of the first day's battle. We held the ground on which were strewn the corpses of both blue and gray, in some places lying side by side. The hot August sun had parched the grass to a crisp, and it was frequently ignited by bursting shells. In this way, the clothes of the dead were sometimes burned off, and the bodies partially roasted. Such spectacles made little or no impression at the time, and we moved to and fro over the field, scarcely heeding them. By the afternoon of 30 August, the Army of Virginia formed for an assault upon Jackson's wing, which included Battery D, 5th United States Artillery, commanded by Lieutenant Charles E. Hazlett. In the afternoon, I was ordered by Major General Porter to place the battery on a hill to the left of the road in order to shell the woods in front of our position until our infantry advanced, and then turn my guns on the enemy batteries, which included the 1st Rockbridge Artillery. When the order was given, General Reynolds' division occupied the woods on the left and front of the designated position. But as I was proceeding to it, I saw his division withdrawn. Private Moore and the 1st Rockbridge Artillery received orders to engage this wayward battery. About 2 o'clock, we were ordered some distance forward to fire on a battery posted on a low ridge near a piece of woods. By skirting along a body of woods on our left and screened by it, we came out in full view of this battery and on its right flank. My gun, being in front and the first seen by them, attracted their whole fire. But most of their shells passed over our heads and burst among the guns in our rear. In a few minutes, all 4 of our guns were unlimbered and opened on them most vigorously. In 5 or 6 rounds, their guns ceased firing. And he continues, "As we stood by our guns, highly satisfied with our prowess, General Jackson came riding up to the 1st Detachment and said, 'That was handsomely done, very handsomely done.' Then passed on to the other detachments, and to each one addressed some complimentary remark. Battery D of the 5th Artillery had more than Confederate artillery to contend with. As Longstreet began his advance upon that same location, what little Union infantry and artillery in the area had no choice but to retreat. Private Moore and the 1st Rockbridge Artillery returned to their position at the railroad cut and participated in repulsing the Union 5th Corps' assault upon Jackson's wing. The most continued and persistent fighting was where it began, on that portion of the line held by Jackson's old division. In the course of an hour, the attack was repulsed and a countercharge made. But judging from the number of dead the enemy left on the field and the rapidity of their pursuit, the Confederates met with but little resistance thereafter. The 1st Rockbridge Artillery joined in the pursuit of the retreating Union Army, and Private Moore encountered a wounded man on the field. In crossing a field in the pursuit, a short distance from our gun, I passed near a young infantryman, lying entirely alone, with his thigh bone broken by a mini bullet. He was in great distress of mind and body, and asked me most pleadingly to render him some assistance. If I could do nothing else, he begged that I should find his brother, who belonged to Johnston's battery of Bedford County, Virginia. I told him I could not leave my gun, which gave him little comfort, but he told me his name, which was Ferguson, and where his home was. Fortunately, however, I happened on Johnston's battery soon after and sent his brother to him. That Private Moore found this battery was by mere chance, as it was assigned to Longstreet's wing of the army. Scenes like this were no doubt common on the battlefield, a wounded man trying to find a family member on a different part of the battlefield. It was a tall order for Private Moore to look for someone in a specific unit. Though the battle was now in its final stage, his battery would participate in the pursuit until nightfall. Private Moore remained with the 1st Rockbridge Artillery throughout the war, present for the surrender at Appomattox Courthouse. 2 years after the war, Edward Moore encountered the same man he left on the battlefield at 2nd Manassas while visiting relatives in Bedford County, Virginia. As we started to church in Liberty one Sunday morning, I recalled the incident and mentioned it to my aunt's family, and was informed that Ferguson was still alive, and that I would probably see him that morning at church. And sure enough, I was scarcely seated in the church when he came limping in and took a seat near me. I recognized him at once. But fearing he had not forgotten what he felt was cruel indifference in his desperate situation, did not renew our acquaintance. Edward A. Moore wrote his book in 1907, entitled The Story of a Cannoneer Under Stonewall Jackson, in which is told the part taken by the Rockbridge Artillery in the Army of Northern Virginia. I noticed while researching that Edward A. Moore seemed to be quite short in his descriptions of engaging infantry. But if the 1st Rockbridge Artillery faced a Union battery, he provided a detailed account. While engaging infantry was critical to success on the battlefield, besting enemy artillery seemed like it was a point of pride, and Edward A. Moore wanted readers to know it. Thank you for listening to the 12th episode. The link to Private Edward A. Moore's book is now available on the podcast website, firstpersoncivilwarpodcast.com. On Facebook, Instagram, X, and LinkedIn this week, you can find a picture of Edward A. Moore in 1862, which was the year of the battle, and in 1907, when he published his book. Links to social media sites are at the top of each webpage. Nurse Louisa May Alcott of the Georgetown Union Hospital provides next week's first-person account, where she tends to the wounded after the Battle of Fredericksburg. My name is Bill Coghlan, and thank you for listening to First Person Civil War Podcast.